we blob.
Hang on, are we actually live? Is this actually... Oh, it has actually started now. Sorry, hello everyone. We kind of started without you there. I'm here with Razor Fist. We were already halfway through a conversation when this decided to finally...
Okay, sorry. Yeah, we were halfway through a conversation. We were talking about the last episode of the Game Overthinker.
Yes, for the uninitiated, that's Movie Bob, formerly of The Escapist, has finished his epic 100-episode series, and it's worth a mention. So, but yeah, before we go on then, I was saying that, that we've got to give him some credit. He has worked for, I don't know, an eternity on these videos, and he's done the 100 episodes, he's managed to finish it, and he's been the one who's been doing all of the performances, quote unquote, in the videos.
if you feel comfortable describing them in some terms. Which I don't.
Hey, a lot of work clearly went into this, and you know, I kind of feel that they were a labor of love for him. So you know, I want to give him credit because he clearly put a lot of work into it. So I was looking at it, thinking, you know, it probably is a lot of work to pretend to fight with yourself, changing costumes and all this sort of stuff. Imagine like. You know, you do all these attacks and stuff like that, and then you're trying to sync them up, and they don't quite sync up. You're like, ah, shit! Now I've got to redo the whole thing, and it's just him. So I can see how it was probably a lot of work, even, and he kept the quality consistent throughout the whole thing, just consistently mediocre, but it was consistently
low quality. He's the Ed Wood of YouTube video game reviewers. Let's be real here. So my favorite, as I said, I believe you guys were coming in right as I said it. My favorite quote from the latest episode of the final episode of the Overthinker, latest, final, whatever, is the quote when he says, "I'm a pop culture critic. Relevance is my lifeblood, folks." And I'm like, you were just dropped from The Escape. High fructose corn syrup is your lifeblood, Movie Blob. Bad skin where you dress up in baby blue butt flap jammies and vigorously agree with yourself for 30 fucking minutes. There's your fucking lifeblood, Movie Bob.
Did you notice how he was playing chess as well?
Yeah, with himself and the one guy who did the commentary. I forget what his name escapes me, but I watched his video on YouTube and I thought it was hilarious. And even Movie Bob himself reacted to it, and of course with just a cheap insult to the guy, a really bad, unfunny one too.
But no, I was watching it today, and he sits down to play chess with himself, and he sits there and he begins by moving like the king two spaces out, and it's just like, Bob, do you know how to play chess? And then and then it flips over to his opponent, which is also him, and he takes over the castle and moves it as if it's a knight on crack to somewhere in the middle of the chessboard. I'm like, Bob, what are you doing? You know, never.
You don't understand how these nouveau gauche types play chess. They have their own rules.
This is clearly something I've never seen.
Chess do not apply to them. My other favorite bit was when, in this video, he described Call of Duty as neocon war propaganda. I was telling you before the stream started, I'm like, yeah. I guess I missed the fucking meeting where neocons decided that every bad guy in the world is a rich old white dude.
That kind of seems like the opposite of what they've been telling us for the past 20
years. Yeah, like, name a Call of Duty. I mean, I get that you're shooting brown people for most of the games, but, like, at the end, who's always the bad guy? It's an American general or an American businessman or it's a Russian general or it's always a white guy.
Mm-hmm. And I don't play these games, but I'm aware that there has been a distinctly sort of anti-war theme, like in the narrative in the last few. Is that true, or am I being misinformed there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I would say it goes all the way back to... Even Call of Duty 4 was a fairly anti-war film. They open up... A film. It's kind of a film at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, game, yeah.
That was the most Freudian of Freudian flips. But the game opens up with like a nuclear detonation. I don't know how that's pro-war. I don't see anyone having a circle jerk saying, "Yay, nuclear detonations! My character's just died." Huzzah!
Yeah, yeah. This has been wonderful. And but this all stems back from Bob's absolute hatred of the right. He's so and oh, the conspiracy theories.
He would have to be in a booth. He would actually have to be in a booth in a pitch black room to be projecting any fucking more than he is right now. It's just pure projection. He will project the right onto everyone. If I disagree with him, I'm a bro. Even though, like, we honestly, looking at the games that we both like, apart from his obvious predilection for Japanese schoolgirls, we have a fairly identical taste in gaming. Well, Thief the Dark Project is not exactly a bro-tastic video game.
Oh, it's a hell of a good game, Thief the Dark Project. It's just one of those eternal classics.
But was it you who linked me to the video that I hadn't seen in forever? Actually, I think my buddy A. Solieri linked me to it while back. And I think we did a takedown on it where it was the Building a Better Gamer video.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. But Bob Chipman is advising people, giving dietary advice. Yeah, you should exercise. Don't eat so many. I can't even get it out. Bob. What
is
your
fucking passionate exhortation on the subject of gamers more physically active? Yeah, Bob, just what I'm looking for on YouTube, an impassioned cardiac critique from someone who looks like he knows the best wine to pair with a medium-sized sedan. I think you've isolated a market there, Bob.
I mean, he does, at one point in the video, he pays a very, very small attention to the fact, he says something like, and it's not even him saying it, but it's just a screenshot of him saying something like, "Yes, I know a fat guy talking about exercise." And it's just like, no, Bob,
that's the only, in 20 minutes,
yeah,
in
exactly.
20 ponderous minutes.
Bob, if it was just like a normal fat guy, you know, just some guy who was a bit chubby saying about exercise, then yes, that would be appropriate. You don't seem to understand the scope of what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, and it's not like we're just poking look, if I were... I don't expect people would take much of my advice seriously if I were telling people how to bulk up for a sumo competition.
You know exactly. What I mean?
It's not... It's just being realistic and considering the source. Like, if a fat guy's giving advice like that, I guess he's playing devil's food advocate? I don't know.
Devil's cake advocate.
Oh man, now I want devil's food cake. God damn it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, come on. Every time I see this guy, and he was tweeting online about, well, where else is he gonna tweet at?
Obviously, yeah.
Every time I see him tweet that he's flying out to a con, it makes me doubt the very physics of air travel, and he's gonna give me a fucking critique on goddamn physical fitness.
He always strikes me as the sort of person who probably complains that he gets charged for two seats or something like that.
Or the guy that you're seated next to, and there's like an empty seat between you, and you go to the bathroom and come back, and he's taken up the second one. Like, I hate that. God, I hate when people do that. Passive aggressive cunts.
What was I gonna say? There was something else about Bob that I was gonna say, I can't remember what it was now. There's just so much about Bob's.
My favorite phrase in that was he mentioned inertia or something. He mentioned inertia, and it was like, way to just leave the door open, Bob.
You don't help yourself.
Why didn't we like listen to treatises on why? That's what he said. He said idleness is part of the fundamental inertia of gaming. Like, how are you an expert? Just because you have enough mass to support your own self-perpetuating field of it.
Well, one thing I always find funny is that he gives mention to, like, oh, feminist conspiracies and games and stuff like that. And then he goes on about right-wing conspiracies, about how right-wing people are trying to manipulate gamers for their own agenda. And he's talking about Breitbart breaking the Game Journal pros list and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, like, he contradicts himself as well. I believe in that video he says something to the effect of, right-wingers had been trying to get into gaming for years, ever since they realized that video games hadn't yet grown up like films had. And it's like, so wait a minute, you're kind of arguing that right-wingers are already in games, but then you're saying they're trying to infiltrate it at the same time. Like, which is it? Yeah. You're kind of having your devil's fruit cake and eating it too.
Well, that's the and then when talking about gaming, he's like, you know, all these right-wingers are puppeteering you or something to those effects. It's like, no, Bob, look, man, I know that you might want to think that's the case, but you have to understand, people are pissed off at you guys because you're dicks. You're fucking dicks, and you will lie to yourselves. You know, everyone knows what fucking Breitbart are about. You know, everyone knows what Adam Baldwin wants, all sorts of stuff. Honestly, they're really not that fucking, you know, that what they want is really not too similar to what I want. But they... in the actual journalistic legwork, you know? Yeah.
And did you catch his oh-so-cogent summary of Gamergate in its entirety?
I did. Go on. Sorry, do you want to remind everyone? Just
he was one of the people who just boils it down to, oh, Zoe Quinn. The whole Zoe Quinn started it because there was an angry boyfriend who got back at his girlfriend and whatever, and then they turned it into an excuse to believe that there was some sort of conspiracy. They construed it as a conspiracy. On what planet is the subject of an article being fucked by the guy who's writing the article not grounds for a conspiracy? That's like, what?
But it doesn't even need to be a conspiracy. This is naked fucking corruption, Bob. Yeah. And the thing is, in his description of it, he specifically ignores the fact that Grayson was a journalist. Completely. He automatically goes, well, these people, you know, I think he actually says the word misogyny, and I'm just like, oh, fuck's sake, Bob. You know, for fuck's sake, you are deliberately, willfully ignoring it.
Let's be real. With how feminism is gone now, I mean, it's misogynist is the new duty head. It's like it doesn't. It's lost its meaning.
Well,
they've overused it.
I spend a lot of time reading a lot of feminist stuff, and I think misogynist has literally become their word for anti-feminist.
Because it is absolutely pirouetted off the deep end.
Yeah, I've heard them describe so many women as misogynist, and I'm thinking, really, you're actually going to call these
I've
women?
I've seen it. Like, what was it? I don't know if it was Anita or somebody else who was arguing that shaving, and this is a very popular argument, by the way, in third wave feminist circles, that shaving your slatch is somehow perpetuating misogyny. A decision a woman makes for herself in the privacy of her bathroom. Like, I literally cannot envision a location where a man considerably has less authority than a woman's restroom. And the argument that they use, oh, you want me to shave because you're secretly attracted to little girls, that betrays the latent pedophilic underpinnings of the male psyche. Right, and women wear makeup because men secretly want to fuck clowns. Shave the barnacles off your slash. Shut up.
It's just about maintenance, for Christ's sake.
It's a woman's choice. Let her make her own goddamn choice. Wow, Jesus.
Since we're on the subject of choice, did you see Anita Sarkeesian at the How to Be a Feminist thing in the Sydney Opera House?
No.
Really? Oh, shit, man. It is... Okay,
well, and then you only have to take 5 seconds and look at one of her videos. I mean, Sarkeesian invariably in all these videos, she's dolled up like the only clean whore in Saigon. Like,
absolutely. It's incredible how she'll sit there and talk about gender signifiers with her hoopy earrings, long hair, and plushed up lipstick, you know? It's incredible. No sense of irony whatsoever. But the thing is, this roundtable was, it was amazing. It was, she was literally coming out and saying all of those things that you knew that she thought, but she was literally saying, like, women make, what exactly does she say? I'm going to paraphrase, but she's complaining that women have agency and they make choices. And she's complaining that the choices that women make hurt other women. And what she means is the choices women make hurt feminism. You know, it doesn't promote feminism, and she doesn't like that. And so she is arguing against women being able to make their own choices. It's unfucking believable. I was just staggered. I'm going to be doing like a big video on it at some point, just because there is so much in there. There is just
that's
so
at the core of it. It's always the core philosophy is, you know, we know better than you do, is just the long and short of it. You know, you don't need any of those pesky decisions or free will. We'll handle that. We'll take the wheel. It's fine.
She's literally saying that women are incapable of making their own decisions.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the implication, is that women are absolutely too incompetent to make their own decisions.
Absolutely. And the thing is, she starts by saying, I used to be one of those people who said, I believe in equality, but I'm not a feminist. And it's just like, okay, well, what happened? And then she's like, I had to learn how to be a feminist. And then all of a sudden, I was seeing misogyny and sexism everywhere, and I became, like, the most unpleasant person to be around. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's like a completely bullshit version of They Live. That's what it's like.
It absolutely is. It's exactly like that. And you must think, you know, okay, stop you there, Anita, right? Because if suddenly the whole world is just literally overnight flips from being completely, it's a bunch of people, independent actors, making independent decisions, to misogyny everywhere, do you think you might be wrong? You know, I just want you to reconsider your perspective, for fuck's sake. But it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
Oh, I know. Absurd when we're discussing Sarkeesian? Are you sure? Are you sure?
if you can believe it. If you can believe
it. I'll suspend my disbelief for a moment.
On that note, I've just checked Twitter and people are like, oh yeah, by the way, it's on the subject of Anita Sarkeesian, it's Happy National Cleavage Day, which Sarkeesian must just be raging in San Francisco. He hates the male gaze. That's the thing. All the way through this thing, she's such a Puritan. She is such a Puritan. She's the most sex negative feminist that could possibly have.
Well, a lot of these third wave feminists are pushing the. We were going to talk about this too. The ban of booth babes from E3 and other events and so
good
forth.
Segue. Let's go.
I mean, I've always felt they were kind of an irrelevancy. I think that's the worst thing you can say about booth babes.
Yeah.
That's just the irony of it all, is that their puritanism is so all-encompassing, they wind up disadvantaging women in some way. I mean, because there's women that get employed. They're employed.
And being taking center stage to, in fact, draw young men over. You know, they're so appealing, young men will gravitate to them. But they're so disadvantaged. So disadvantaged.
I'm not entirely anti a booth babe ban, but I want to make it perfectly clear that the reason that I would support one is just because it's a distraction. I would rather these events were more about gaming. Now, that said, I understand they're never going to be about gaming again, because it's all about fluff. We all are hip to that fact. So as long as it's all about fluff, what's wrong with looking at some titties?
Did you see there was an article on Reaction.com? It's not normally the sort of place that I go to, but you know, talking about gaming not being about games anymore. This I'm going to share my screen because it was just one of those things you've got to fucking see.
Right?
All right. I've got two things to show actually, but right. So everyone should probably be able to see top 10 cringeworthy pictures that signal the decline of the GDC. Now, this is for people who don't know.
They should all be photographs of Tim Schafer's speech. throwing that out there.
I love how many people he pissed off with that. People who aren't part of Gamergate, they don't care about Gamergate, probably didn't even like Gamergate. But Tim, what a fucking fat, rich, old white man gets up on a stage what should have been a politically neutral conference to mock women and minorities with a fucking sock puppet like a child. Tim, you fucking idiot. You look like the manifestation of the patriarchy.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like every time you think maybe the momentum is going out of Gamergate a little bit, some idiot does something so stupid that you can no longer ignore its need to exist.
They cannot help themselves, can they? They just can't fucking.
They
help
have
themselves.
To poke the tiger.
They do, but So this was great. I mean, Zoe Quinn, obviously, but fat chicks. I'm not so worried about the fat chicks being there. That's fine. But stuff like this. This was a poster on the wall. Feminism isn't a destination. You don't get to identify and quit. Eliminating conscious bias is step one out of infinite. We are all ist. Conquering unconscious bias requires active work. Express your anti-bias. What are we at a game developers conference here?
Yeah, what is this?
This?
I had an ex who took a feminist course at a college. It was actually less biased than that, than what I just read just now.
And exactly. And then you've got the diversity call. Diversity attracts diversity. It's like, okay, Han, you have looked at this incredibly white pastiche of people, haven't you? You know, but nothing but like diversity this, diversity that.
Yeah.
Double think bullshit.
Double think.
I love this. Exposing students to diverse perspectives expands their potential as makers, creators, programmers, critics, and artists. It's like, what? Oh, and then Tim fucking Schafer.
well, we did eventually get around to that.
Gender neutral bathrooms.
Why? What in the fuck? What in the fuck?
Safe spaces, obviously. Fucking, of course, safe spaces. And then equating Gamergate, content warning, rape, murder, racism, misogyny, transphobia, violence, Gamergate.
Wasn't that wasn't that part of Tim Schafer's speech?
It might have been, but I'm just looking at it like one of those things just isn't like the rest, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone was transphobic.
Oh, no. He did that. He did that deliberately
to be
a provocateur.
Mm.
So, fucking ridiculous.
And and then something from NeoGAF. that in itself was pretty fucking ridiculous, I thought. And someone has just tweeted this at me, which I'm just going to fanny around getting this to work now. You know who Lionhead Studios are, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, they've just tweeted this for National Cleavage Day. Can you see that?
Yeah.
And yep. You can imagine that the first comment is, "Did you just seriously do this, Lionhead Studios?"
Get over it.
Good grief.
Come on, this is a game, like... Did any of you play any of the Fable games?
Oh, no. They're like, are you serious? My mind is full of fuck. What the shit is this? Sigh! Oh, my God. And then someone was like, oh, this has got Gamergate written all over it. I don't know where that's gone, actually, but someone said this, and it's just like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Did you realize that Lionhead Studios were doing this before Gamergate was even a thought? Like, did they realize that this kind of stuff is in the first Fable game?
They don't play games. They don't play games. They have no idea. They don't fucking play games. And it's just like, you know, I mean, I'm going to retweet that shit, actually, because that's fucking awesome. Well done, Lionhead. You know, fucking impressed. Oh, what? Apparently I'm allowed to retweet it. Fuck.
And what do you want to bet it was a female who tweeted that? Because there are actually a lot of females that work at Lionhead Studios.
I hope so. It's probably how they're going to cover it, isn't it? You know, but like, well, a woman did it, so what are you talking about?
I know that at least one of their major senior artists on Fable 2 was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Who basically was responsible for a good chunk of the art design. So
there should be,
that just goes to show, it doesn't... It's all about agency, and it's all about being an ist, and just like that fucking PowerPoint presentation said.
It absolutely is, and you know, you don't get to identify and quit, because what they really mean there is you don't get to just go, yeah, I'm a feminist, now can we talk about something else? You know, which is ideally what everyone else would like to do.
Yeah.
But,
look, I've complained... there... It's so weird because, like, when you really, like, if these people were able to think more than two steps into a problem, if you really want to get down to the concept of objectifying people, okay, let's say there's sexualized booth babes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not, like, equally demeaning to men? Like, if they're literally hiring swaths of women, like, dozens of, if Activision is literally shipping these failed underwear models into E3 so that they can catch the eye of guys, is that not basically like saying, oh, you're all mouth breathers, and if we put hot chicks here, you'll buy our stuff? that's kind of, that's a little bit demeaning to men as well. Like, if we were all as cagey about being demeaned as these fucking bitches are, we would actually have an argument, I believe, and that could certainly be fleshed out more.
Yeah, but I mean, it's completely taking advantage of men's, like, you know, most base urges, isn't it? Oh, there's an attractive woman over there. I'm going to walk in that direction.
The only difference is we don't care.
Yeah, exactly. What, you know, we're not getting our fucking panties in a bunch over it. So, but yeah, what was the thing you wanted to talk about of the movie bot?
I'm sorry, what?
What was the thing you wanted to talk about of the movie, Bob?
Oh, no, That was what I did actually want to talk a little bit about. That. I mean, the Booth Babe Bam from E3 is kind of... I think that's like... That right there is a sign of the times. That is a moment where we can kind of take the pulse of where the gaming industry is right now and see, like, bam, like, that's where we've come to in such a short period of time. We've got... I mean... I remember when E3 a few years back tried to be more of like an industry trade show. You remember that for like, I don't know, 3 years? They pared down the hype and they didn't have as many like big flashy announcements and they didn't let booth babes in for a little while. Do you remember what I'm talking about at all?
I actually don't know very well, because I'm not really into these.
Because, like, for a few years, E3 became a little bit of a punchline, because it was, like,
well, that's just a constant fucking...
Yeah, it became, like, just this big fucking hype foundry. It was essentially the San Diego Comic-Con of gaming, which is kind of what it's defaulted back into being. And then a few developers and publishers started to complain, and they were just like, we're not really talking about games anymore. So why don't we talk about games again and turn it into a little bit more private, make people have to have a press pass in order to get in and so forth. It couldn't be quite such an event. And it wasn't the best move they ever made, because like the next year a bunch of people pulled out because nobody was showing up and it wasn't cultivating the same amount of hype as it had before. Right, I mean, I could see that in this case, but E3 is not doing that, and PAX isn't doing that. They're not paring down to become more of a fucking industry trade show that just concentrates on digital entertainment and actually video game announcements. They're still just about fluff and hype, so this is sort of a pointless fucking gesture.
If you are
going to support a Booth Babe Bam, at least have a good reason for it. Like, am I the only fuck in the room who realizes that banning the booth bitches from E3 is just removing one more rung from the ladder of their inevitable descent into porn? Is that... I just say it.
I wasn't thinking of the booth babes. How selfish.
I was thinking myself.
This is the thing. I'm not like one of the industry show kind of guys, because... Honestly, I just think, like you said, they're all fluff. It's just all, you know, it's all bullshit. But I guess they are reflective of the state of the industry. And again, like with you, with the Booth Babes, I'm actually, you know, I'm 35. You know, if I was 16, 17, then yeah, there'd probably be an issue. There'd probably be something I'd be attracted to or whatever. But you know, I'm just not that bothered about that sort of stuff now. You know, if I'm more concerned about where I'm spending my money. I don't get that much time to play games these days, so I'm more concerned about how I can efficiently parcel out my time to play what, you know, specific games. So, you know, a pair of tips.
You're not missing much on the game front.
Oh,
not a whole lot of.
But that's the thing.
Five-star masterpieces coming out these days.
Oh, I know. I bought Dying Light the other day, and I haven't actually... I've installed it, but I haven't actually even booted it up yet.
I'm in the midst of playing the new Guilty Gear, which I'm enjoying, and I'm about to publish a review of Final Fantasy Type-0, talk about night and day.
See, I've never been a Final Fantasy fan.
Fucking pin a medal on your chest, sir.
I know. I'm like the only person on earth who, honestly, all of my friends, just a single one. Oh, Final Fantasy VII is the best game ever. All right. I've heard it so many times. I'm sure it's a great game. I'm just not that interested in it. You know? I like my Total War games. Thank you.
Yeah, I did. Well, I did a rather ballyhooed video. It was actually my second episode. That was basically a vicious takedown of Final Fantasy VII. So, not the biggest fan in the world. Although I don't hate it as much as people probably assume. I hate the long-term effect that game had on JRPGs going forward, and implicitly on the industry in general. The whole cutscene thing and the linear narrative thing, all that stuff that we're still sort of wallowing in, and the big movie-style trailers to advertise the game, all that bullshit starts with Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I mean, in itself, it's probably a good game. You know, everyone wouldn't be talking about it so much if it wasn't a good game, but it's one of those things when it kind of warps the culture around it because of the legendary reputation it ends up with.
Yeah, a bit like, I think the most recent example of that is probably, or the most recent prominent example that I can think of is probably Resident Evil 4, which is a great game. I enjoy it, but it set the pattern for what 5 and 6 were, and all the problems that those games had kind of started on 4. 4 works. It's not like my favorite game ever, but it's, you know, it started third-person shooting, action-oriented, rampant cutscenes, although cutscenes were always in there. And, of course, the QuickTime events, the omnipresent QuickTime events, fucking Simon Says minigames.
See, I'm still, I mean, I'm not a console pleb, so I don't have to deal with QuickTime events. I've never played a game with QuickTime events, in fact. And so
I'm gonna pin another medal on your chest. Jesus Christ! How are you avoiding these tropes?
Because I'm part of
what, PC. What is the secret of your power? Are you from a dying planet? Did you crash here in a space capsule?
Pretty much, actually. But the thing is, I'm a PC gamer. I've never had I've had consoles, but this was before the era of QuickTime events. And so I'm like, look, I see them in videos and stuff, and I'm just baffled as to who thought this would be a good idea. Just like, just show me the fucking cutscene with me fighting off the monster or something, or whatever. You know, there's one action that you can take in the like 30 seconds of the QuickTime event, and it's just like, so what? What do you think I'm gonna fuck it up? You know, I mean, what else am I supposed to do in that time? You know, press.
Yeah, my favorite is the two cutscenes with a tutorial sandwiched in between them. That's my favorite. Because apparently we don't have two brain cells to carry a static charge.
Exactly.
Thanks for that one. Go ahead and buy me a lifetime prescription of adult diapers while you're at it.
Exactly. You know what? I'll just have an early night and stop playing. You know what I mean? Why am I doing any of this? You know? It's the hand-holding. I don't like the hand-holding. And that's
absolutely
what quick-time events feel like to me. You know? They really do.
It drives me fucking nuts. But I don't know. I was always more of a PC gamer as well. I still generally consider myself more of a PC gamer. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, in order to keep up with modern titles, a lot of them don't come out on PC.
That's true.
So
I'm still waiting
still
for GTA 5.
I have a console.
5.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really am. Just fucking, it's a slap in the face, Rockstar. What the fuck are you doing?
Yep. Well, they did that. They pulled that same shit with Red Dead Redemption and finally released that, didn't they?
You know, I haven't actually played that yet.
You should. It's very, very good, and it's
that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I absolutely love the shit out of it. It was fantastic. And there's not many good Western games, but that's great, irrespective of being a Western game. It's just really fucking good as a game, as an open world, some slight light RPG elements to it. Mm-hmm. Pretty good gunplay. Graphics hold up remarkably well, considering this game came out in 2010.
It's the gunplay that interests me in it. Actually, I've seen videos in it. It looks good. It's again just time, really.
It's a little insulting. The gunplay's a little insultingly easy. I'm not gonna lie. Like you kind of can definitely get into a mode where the game basically auto aims for you, essentially, and people's heads off without even fucking trying. So there's this thing where basically every time you draw your gun, the game auto aims onto someone. So if you wanted to, you could pretty much just take everyone down like fucking Eastwood and Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But that's cool.
Yeah, that's true. If that's like what the game's built around, then fine. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
So there were some other things that I did want to talk about before we start just getting into talking shit. right. Let me just get them. Yeah. So okay. So you didn't know about this Rust game, did you?
No, I didn't. But you were talking about the coverage.
Yeah, so I'm sharing the screen, so everyone at home should be able to see it as well. Now, someone emailed this to me, and it was on Gama Sutra, so wonderful. Rust experiments with racial empathy by assigning players skin tones. I'm thinking, okay, this can only end well. You know, this can only end well. Now, to sum it up, it's basically the game Rust. When you start the game, it assigns, based on your Steam key, it assigns you a race of some sort in the game. So it you know, tells you what your skin color is, what your eye color is, and it's designed to mimic a gene pool where you have to adjust to the hand you're dealt appearance-wise, according to this article, which is not uninteresting, but it becomes...
No, it sounds like an interesting mechanic. I just have a feeling they're reading more into it than was intended.
It's more like... I don't think you understand like what really happens in video games, you know. So the guy who did this is a guy called Gary Newman. He's like, I would love nothing more than if playing a black guy in a game made a white guy appreciate what it was like to be a persecuted minority. And I'm just sat there thinking,
come the fuck on! I'm not kidding. You need to tell me you're gonna be in like a third person action game and it's gonna be like, I'm sorry, Katenge, let's stop for 45 minutes and have a discussion about your feelings and what you've been through.
Well,
like, what the fuck?
I'm just thinking, well, that's weird, because I was playing Oblivion a while back, and I loved being an Argonian, because you could breathe underwater, you know? And
yeah.
The guy's like, people have this strange need to play someone similar to themselves. And it's like, no, they don't. No, they fucking don't.
Because I sure was playing a giant fucking cat guy in Skyrim. I'm pretty sure...
I was playing an Argonian because I could breathe underwater. You know, I wasn't doing it because I've got scaly fucking skin.
And that's not even talking about the mods. Let's not even get into what happens when Fur Affinity gets a hold of Skyrim. Let's not even talk about that.
Exactly, and you know, like, I was playing Skyrim, and I'm playing some giant Nord guy, and I'm not a giant Nord guy. You know, I mean, it's this weird obsession with race.
Oh, but you see, Sargon, it's you're enacting an Aryan fantasy because you're clearly a white supremacist at heart. That's what's going on. The Nords are just Norwegian Ubermensch.
I was looking at the stats and thinking, well, they're pretty good stats, you know, they're better than the Red Guards, so... that sounds racist.
Oh, that was awful.
the Red Guards are good at magic, aren't they?
Now we're not going to get into the magic voodoo black people thing now, are we? Because this is going a very bad direction.
I wasn't going to, but the last character I played, I tried the magic, but you can't ever just be a straight mage in a fucking Elder Scrolls game. It really pisses me off. I really, really wish you could, but you can't. You have to have combat, you know, knowledge. So generally I only use restoration magic and, you know, just to keep myself
Going. All the games since Oblivion have definitely nerfed magic. Magic was really cool in Morrowind. It was retarded awesome in Daggerfall because you could customize your own spells and all that fun stuff, which you could do to an extent in Oblivion and Morrowind, but not with the same level of depth. There were more schools of magic, if I remember correctly, in Daggerfall. And I'm not a big magic guy, so I didn't really explore it, but from what I understand, Daggerfall's magic system was stupid deep.
See, I actually came to the Elder Scrolls games in Oblivion, and then I went back to Morrowind. But I didn't get on with Morrowind because you can't fucking block. And after playing Oblivion, I was, you know, so used to having the block function that I couldn't really...
I don't even think I've ever noticed that I didn't have the block. That's the thing about Morrowind, though. You crank up your agility so much that you just dodge. That's sort of that's what replaces the block in Morrowind. You just dodge everything.
And you'll notice that we're not talking about the fucking identity politics of the game. We're talking about what you can do with the mechanics of the game. And all this article is identity politics. This exemplifies everything that's wrong with the gaming industry, or at least the media, right? This guy's talking about nothing about what, you know, I want a white guy to know what it's like to be a persecuted minority. And I'm just starting to think, okay, right, I'll stop you there. If this is some sort of MMO, I don't even know what kind of game this is. Don't even know. Don't even tell me.
That seemed to be the takeaway from this, is that these people are writing a series of articles that are all about racial oppression, and they haven't really discussed what the game is for even a second.
Well, I have no idea. And the thing is, if it's like a third person or a first person shooter and it's an MMO or, you know, a multiplayer game of some sort, I'm not really bothered about the race of the person who's shooting at me, but I'm concerned that they're shooting at me, and when I'm running around and I see someone, I'm just going to start shooting at them. You know, it's not a racial judgment. It's a bit like
if I'm walking down the street in, say, Los Angeles, and someone opens fire on me. I'm sorry, at that point you cease to be white American, Mexican American. You become asshole that needs to die American.
Exactly.
And that's war. That's all it means. And it's the same thing in video games.
And the only information that we get, apart from the identity politics, is this link here, which is the latest update to Facepunch Studios' early access survival game. It's like, what are you talking about? Oh, it's a dev blog. And it's like, right, so what you're saying is I'm supposed to take away the empirical information about the game from their development blog. That's it. You know, is it a good game, or is it, you know, what are the controls like, all this sort of stuff. You know, all you get is their dev blog. It's like, okay, that's actually not very helpful, because they're going to tell
and
me
that
it's
really is
brilliant.
Yeah.
You know.
That really is the priorities of modern gaming journalism in a nutshell, is, okay, here's a bunch of social bullshit we're going to cram down your throat, and oh hey, if you would actually know about this fucking game, go get it straight from the horse's mouth and let them shove their propaganda down your throat.
Exactly.
It's not like it's our job to objectively assess the merits of this game, or tell
exactly.
you anything about the playable demo
we
got.
Consumer advocates or something like that, you know. Yeah. It's not our job to, you know, read these press releases for you and interpret.
Yeah.
It's just such phenomenal bullshit. I assume that it's some sort of open world fucking, you get a stone pickaxe, so I imagine you harvest stuff like in every other game that exists nowadays.
yeah.
You know, and the thing is, this game, it might well be quite good, you know, but I just, you know, they don't seem to understand, there just aren't enough interactions to make racism in a game viable. You know,
I would argue even in the average RPG, I mean, let's talk about what are like the most interactive in terms of like conversationally. What are the most interactive examples? There be maybe like Alpha Protocol or Mass Effect or Dragon Age or something like that.
Yeah,
where you've got
a
dialogue wheel or whatever. Even within that context, can you conceivably, I mean, Jesus Christ, play Mass Effect 3 sometime. They try to tackle the issue of homosexuality. Are you ready to hear how their ingenious tactic for tackling homosexuality? Are you ready
Hit
for this?
Are you clenched?
Okay. The engineer on your ship is gay. You find out within 3 lines of dialogue. He's like, oh, yeah, your ship's purring like a kitten. Yeah, your engine's great. By the way, I suck dick. Like, it's
why?
The most awkward, ham-fisted dialogue in history. That's a really good example of why it kind of doesn't belong in games, because it can't be handled respectably, because the game mechanics, I would argue, possibly may actually preclude it. I think there's actually an argument to be made that just the simplicity with which a game can't be too unwieldy in terms of its mechanics. It can't be, or else it won't be fun. So having a 45-minute sit-down roundtable discussion where you recommend each other your favorite feminist authors is not a viable solution.
It does presume excessively about the person playing it, doesn't it?
It does.
You couldn't have it in a Muslim game, a game you were selling in a Muslim country, you know, overwhelming, or in Russia, you know.
They tried to do that, and that's the awful thing. They almost did that with the first Assassin's Creed, because pretty much every character you run into in that game is theoretically Muslim. But then they, like, Disney-fied the fuck out of it before final release. From what I understand, there was originally going to be a lot more religious overtones. They also weren't going to have that goofy fucking animus machine that you're traveling through your ancestors' memories. It was just going to be a story set in the Middle East during the Crusades, which sounds a lot more interesting than what we got, quite frankly.
Yeah, I've actually never played an Assassin's Creed game. I've heard a lot of good things. It's just, there are so many
first
games.
First two. Yeah. Play the first two, ignore the rest, buddy.
Well, I've not heard good things about the later ones, like everyone says. Getting back to this, though, like, It's a weird thing that it's just talking about identity politics, and then you get to the last line where Newman's comments on the matter are worth reading in full on the Kotaku article. on a competing website.
Yeah, a lot of that happens, right? No, a lot of that happens. Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah, is gaming journalism not succumbing to the Associated Press effect, where one website writes or links a story and then everybody else just cites it? Like, I've often suspect one of the things that was remarkable about Gamergate when they, you know, the whole gamers are dead thing happened, is that very few of those articles actually linked to an original article. That's what made everyone smell a rat, is that it seemed like it just kind of conjured up out of nowhere. No one was citing anyone else.
Well, there were a few of them. I think
there were a couple, but for the most part, it was like everybody just woke up one day and kind of decided, oh, gamers are over.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. We get to an article by Nathan Grayson. Fucking of course. Nathan, oh, it's a video game Grayson. Fucking finally gets to talk about something he likes. Black guys. So it's just, you know... And so, yeah, it's like, literally, it's just like, here, why don't you just, if you want to read more, just go to our opponent's website, you know, go there, and but the thing is, it shows, like, the sort of cascade effect that we're having the issue with, where, you know what, the Gamers Are Dead articles might not have even been the result of collusion. They really might not have done. They might well have been the result of ideological conformity and laziness, which I think is what we're seeing here. You know, what we're seeing is Nathan Grayson goes and speaks to some studio about a game called Rust. It's some open world game where you can do stuff. He doesn't care about that. What he cares about are the social things where you can only be a black guy or whatever. You don't get to choose. Okay, he finds that interesting. And then someone else at Gamma Sutra is like, oh, I find that interesting, and I feel the need to announce to the world that I found that interesting. So article that is nothing in here that isn't in here, but I'm going to write this article anyway, just so it's on Gamma Sutra. So it's like a show. You know, it's showing other people. It's like a performance. It's showing other people, hey, you know, we're on the same team, and we're looking to Grayson's article.
You know what it is? It's ideological show and tell, is what it is. It's
like wearing the colors. You know.
It's almost like filming yourself, talking to yourself, agreeing with yourself in a final Game Over Eater episode. It's kind of like that, a little bit.
Oh, Bob, you're never going to live. My favorite bit of that is where he's sat there going, hey, what, you know, and you can have the little handheld devices that had all the Metroid games on, and then the other one's like, yeah, that's a good idea.
It's like that's mobile gaming, you gibbering retard.
What do you think, fucking... Just, but yeah.
That's called a smartphone, you drooling moron. Jesus Christ.
That would have been a good idea about 15 years ago. You know, it would have been a good idea then. You know, but now...
Yeah, if everyone's phone wasn't jailbroken, it would be brilliant.
Exactly.
It's not happening.
Exactly. But so yeah, I'm going through this whole article. Again, it's just talking about the fucking race of the person that you have to be. And it's just like, okay, what I don't care. I'm not looking at my own fucking character when I'm running around shooting people or harvesting fucking wood or whatever, building a cabin. I just don't care what my character looks like. He could be an oblong fucking beige block or something. I don't give a damn. You know, I care about how fast he runs and how high he jumps and how quickly he reloads his guns, you know. But that's the thing. This whole thing is just... There are so many points with this that just show everything wrong with modern gaming media. You know, they don't even need to collude. They're all so on the same page.
Didn't I talk about this on the last stream a little bit, where I was shocked? I actually found myself agreeing with a thing that Bill O'Reilly had said, because he was talking. I believe they had accused him of being biased, which, no shit, an editorial program is biased.
Duh,
I'm shocked. And it's an editorial program. He has to promulgate a bias. That's the idea.
He's not reporting.
He never claims he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, so like, they accused him of bias, and he was like, okay, yeah, like, I'm biased, He's like, and then there was some sort of story that came out about like a memo circulating around the O'Reilly Factor offices saying, let's like slant this story in this direction or something. And everyone pointed to it as this smoking gun of Fox News being biased, which no shit.
Did we need a smoking gun?
Did you realize the canoe had been invented too? Like, come on. Anyways, so pointed all the leftist media outlets kind of pointed to this. Sorry, I just hit my microphone.
No, don't worry about
it. Pointed to this as this example of collusion at Fox News, and he was like, you know what the real problem is that you need to be asking is, why don't NBC, ABC, and CBS have to have memos like this around their editorial rooms? It's because they're all on the same page ideologically. Yeah. They implicitly slant their news. And I was like, fucking out of the seriously, out of the mouth of intellectual babes. There's some serious fucking truth there. He's not wrong. It's like, I think arguably an even more pernicious problem in gaming journalism is when they don't have to collude. There doesn't have to be a conspiracy simply because they all come from the same ideological echo chambers. They all support essentially the exact same causes, and they're all trying to push it forward in essentially the exact same way.
I can't imagine running a website for video game news and stuff like that, reviews, editorial, that sort of thing, where I just go to, I just find Nathan Grayson's article, write up of it, read it, and go, oh yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm going to pull out the little bits I like, just parrot them back in less time on my own website, and then just be like, you know what, just go to his website if you want to read more about it. You know, you want the click. You don't want them to just go, you know what, I will just go straight to there, thank you. You know, I just don't understand how they think their business model works.
Yeah. So I do not understand. Well, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a closing of the ranks. Hey, go to this website, because we don't want to foul up each other's hustles, so try and keep the traffic flowing on these subpar journalistic circle jerks.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I actually watched a documentary. Not a documentary, but like I think it was NBC or ABC news piece about Nick Denton and Gawker, and it was very interesting. And the one thing that I took away from it was that they're shameless. They are absolutely shameless. They are not afraid to be the lowest common denominator. In fact, in almost any profession, in almost any walk of life, in anything that anyone does, there is a right way to do things and there is a wrong way to do things. They are proud to do things the wrong way. They are absolutely proud. And in the middle, all of the Gawker sites are all in the same building. They'll sit near each other. And it breeds the same sort of culture. For example, in this room, Stephen Totilo was rubbing shoulders with the Jezebel writers.
Yeah, I bet.
No, exactly. He absolutely was. And so it's like, right, okay, that explains a lot. But on the
way, did I mention to you ever? Did I ever mention to you, by the way, that Stephen Totilo personally reacted to my? And this was long before Gamergate was a thing.
No,
reacted to my video, the Kotaku conundrum, the downfall of gaming journalism. I think it was number 2. It was one of the earlier episodes. Yeah,
what did he say?
Oh man, he took personal exception to it. I was actually surprised. I'm like, Stephen Totilo piping in on just some YouTube, because at the time it didn't have that many views. You know, I was out in the wilderness doing that series in the beginning, but
yeah, no one else was paying attention at the time.
Yeah, he pretty much just threw some random platitude about him not getting it at all. At me, and then just went on his merry way. I wonder if he gets that there was a little more to that argument now. I wonder if he understands that I wasn't alone.
I can't even imagine, to be honest. I think that he... Well, that was the thing. They've got a specific kind of culture at these Gawker offices, and you could tell by the way that they were all talking. They all use very similar mannerisms and
they have their own ideological shorthand.
Yeah, they really do. Look, when you're watching someone from Gawker in an interview or something like that, listen out for them saying the word interesting as a response. You know, someone will say something that is a good point, and they, instead of acknowledging the point or conceding that they're wrong or anything like that, they'll say interesting, as if that's a fucking answer. You know, and it's just a way of getting out of having to admit, oh, actually, that's me, you know, painted into the corner, and now I have to change my position.
But they it kind of reminds me of that Young Turks interview with Girl Writes What.
Hey, that was
everything she said every time she nailed him to the wall. Interesting. Okay. Interesting. Gotcha. Okay.
And then he starts getting hysterical and accusing her and then, of irrational.
And then he starts speaking in tongues.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, go make me a sandwich. It's like, Chen, what are you fucking doing? I thought you were progressive. You know? And I love the whole thing about that. It's like, if you don't agree with my progressive ideology, I'm going to abandon that progressive ideology and become Bill O'Reilly. And it's just like, Chen, what are you doing? You know, you're the progressive, not her. You know? So it's just like, but anyway, the Gork thing, they've got on the wall, just a big TV screen, with all of the articles that are up, and they're all ranked in order of number of clicks, and this is cross-site, so you've got Jezebel, Kotaku, Gorka, Deadspin, all that sort of stuff, and, you know, so it's just a mission for clicks. And he's literally going on about how nothing else matters but the clicks. That is the metric of success, and
yeah,
technically that would be for any website, you know what I mean? But for Gorka, it was the abandonment of standards. There are no standards, there are clicks. It doesn't matter what you're saying, which is why, like, someone sent me a link from Gorka of just a picture of some guy naked face-fucking Abraham Lincoln statue or something. I'm like, yep, that's exactly what...
Oh, God, it's why Kotaku is running stories about a guy dressed up as Batman on a motorcycle on a Japanese speedway.
Yeah.
Like, what... That's a story. That's a story, Kotaku, about how French fries are confusing people in Japan. What the... Way to really strike at the heart of gaming journalism. Way to just nail that. And I recognize that Kotaku has their little series of Japanese articles, but every time they do an article on Japan, it's always some kind of fluff. Get the fucking... Prime Minister of Japan is trying to reinstitute Japanese military... At this point, yeah. They're actually in the process of expanding their military powers more than any point since the cessation
since
of World
War
II. Yeah. And you're talking about an anime schoolgirl statue that you can look up its skirt. Like, fuck
as,
off.
And even then, even what annoys me about it the most as well is, okay, fine. Kotaku, your argument is that, well, we're a gaming site. It's like, okay, great. Why are you talking about some guy dressing up as Batman then? You know, why are you talking about Japanese games or something like that? I was the same with Polygon. I was on there the other day, and because my co-developer Russ sent me some fucking, he ends up getting on to get he goes to Polygon because he thinks it's funny, and I'm like, okay, but you shouldn't give him the traffic. And he's like, yeah, I know, but I think it's funny. I'm like, okay, fine. And he goes on there basically to have arguments with progressives, just about, you know, just about anything, absolutely anything, and he'll get into massive shit flinging with them. But it was, you know, literally it was the same thing. It was like an article about fucking, Batman and stuff like that. And it's just like, what are you guys even writing about? You know, you're going to make yourselves wildly irrelevant. And since we're on the Batman... You know what I mean.
The point I always made, though, with fucking Gawker is... Okay, Kotaku's going to defend Zoe Quinn because they aired her dirty laundry, which I get. I made a video defending her, too. I don't think that her personal drama was relevant to it. I think we should have been concentrating on Nathan Grayson. And for the most part,
Absolutely.
Game of Thrones did exactly that, right? Which is great. I think that was the way to go.
And that's in the face of Quinn's provocation as well. Because Quinn is not some sort of shrinking violet. She's not some sort of innocent bunny. She knows what she's about, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I never labored under any delusions that she was shrinking flower. Yeah. I never believed that, but I did think that the Gamergate movement would be better served by just concentrating on the journalistic thing, concentrating on Nathan Grayson. The fact that he still hasn't been ousted from Kotaku, it's a daily slap in the face to gamers.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous that he got away with what he did, and he didn't. He only admitted what happened after Stephen Totilo confronted him, which Stephen Totilo's own tweets confirm. Which is ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous that Stephen Totilo just took him at his word and was like, so, oh, yeah, he master, says it's not going
master's anymore. Degree in journalism. Master's degree in journalism. And he seems... he works for Gawker. You would think that those things would be incompatible. You would think someone who has a master's degree in journalism, which would obviously involve journalistic ethics, would look at Gawker and say, you know, I don't think I can work for this company. You know? But no. But just as a quick side, Lionhead Studios, you know that tweet I showed earlier with the bus in Aiden? They've taken it down, and they've issued
an apology. Oh, Jesus, I'll read skirt.
I'll read it. We apologize for the imagery we shared earlier. Diversity and inclusion are values we uphold here. We will reinforce these values with our team. Oh, my fucking God. It's the fucking body snatchers.
Okay. We're going to reinforce the hard moral fiber of Lionhead Studios, the game that gave you three-way whore-fucking in Fable 2 and freaking...
I'm going to type that to them.
Like, fucking... Are you kidding me? That's amazing. We're actually delivering a scoop right here live on the air. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, we actually are. This is cool. But it just... Unbelievable. Lionhead, right? And this is something that I keep trying to... The point I keep trying to reinforce them. You cannot please these people. There is never a point where they're happy with what you've done. The prime example is an article I had from This Week in Stupid last week, which was... I can't remember where it was from, but it was... It was International Women's Day, and Nintendo had put out a bunch of like those Rosie the Riveter posters, but with female Nintendo characters on, and this website had written an article saying, these posters are everything that's wrong with video gaming. And it's just like, oh my fucking lord, are you kidding me? They are pandering to you more than anything. This is the best they could possibly do, is go, hey, you see all our female characters, they're all feminists. That's what they were saying by doing it. And yet, no, this is what's wrong with video gaming. It's like, oh, fuck off. Just, there is no pleasing these people. Don't even try. Rant over.
I don't get it. But that's what I'm talking about. Like, Gawker, the entire idea of Gawker defending Zoe Quinn on the basis that her privacy was invaded, as I said, it's ridiculous because because how many times has Gawker dropped sex tapes from celebrities that they went to court to justify having invaded this person's privacy? They went to court against Hulk Hogan and for some ridiculous reason actually managed to win for dropping his sex tape, which is ridiculous. It was filmed against his will, which I gotta believe there's plenty of laws that outlaw that, and it was released against his will. That's freaking ridiculous.
And let's just reverse the genders. Sorry, I just need to clear my throat. Let's reverse the genders.
Absolutely. Imagine if Zoe Quinn's sex tape had been released and that's what had kicked off Gamergate. Can you imagine?
No.
Imagine.
The sky would have fallen, you know. Just Jesus Christ. It would have been the end of the fucking world. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, there's... What kind of pisses me off about this Lionhead thing is it's not that they've apologized to the social justice warriors and been like, oh, we're so sorry, please forgive us. It's, I mean, what did they think was going to happen? You know what we're going to do? We're going to get this picture of like a big-titted maid and tweet this out saying, hey, happy cleavage day.
It's amazing. We're kind of acting like this is the first time that companies have been picketed to not be so sexist. I remember distinctly as a kid people claiming that Mortal Kombat 3 was sexist because of the plunging necklines of like Jade and Kitana and Melina and shit. And you know what happened? Fucking nothing, because the publisher of the game stood up and said, we stand behind their artistic vision and we're not backing down. When the fuck was the last time you saw that happen in gaming?
I don't know, and this brings us on to the Batman cover, the Batgirl cover, sorry. Did you see that change the cover thing?
Yes.
What did you think?
Well, okay, I think some of the anger was misdirected because it was directed at the SGWs that were pressuring them to remove it, but actually, I honestly think it more came from DC Comics, Because DC is, this is like part of a long pattern from DC Comics of pandering to social justice, not pandering to social justice warriors. Let's come right the fuck out with it, folks. DC Comics are social justice warriors.
Yeah,
this is the comic company. Yeah, I talked about this on Twitter a little bit. This is the comic company that pushed a Batwoman who has no character trait apart from the fact that she is a lesbian. That is it. She has no other discernible character trait. And then later on, Dan DiDio admitted in an interview they essentially did it to grab a headline. They did it in 2006 to launch the New 52. They figured it would be a good headline and it would sell some comics and it would get them some good press with the LGBT community. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It worked like a charm. They are SJWs. They're exploitative SJWs, but they're SJWs.
They absolutely are. Like you said, actually, the social justice warriors were doing what social justice warriors do. The Batgirl was, you know, something about not having agency, and she was vulnerable or whatever. That was obviously the sort of thing they're going to complain about. But my favorite part of that
There was the comment in the comments section.
Oh, yeah,
somebody mentioned, actually, I'm going to drop their name. Someone said Marvel are worse or Marvel isn't doing any better. The Dancing Bastard said Marvel isn't doing any better. You're absolutely correct. I mean, they are politically correct as well in a totally different way. Mm-hmm. Marvel recently said, and this is actually because of Disney, largely, which, what do you fucking expect? It's goddamn Disney.
Yeah.
Disney came out and said, like, the smoking ban that's been in effect over at Marvel ever since the days of Joe Quesada being editor-in-chief, there can be no smoking in a Marvel comic, at least not in one that isn't a Max comic, which is the adult comics line that they have. Now that extends to films, and all Disney films, and all, which, you know, not that there was ever a ton of smoking in Star Wars, but they own Star Wars now. There can never be smoking in that. There can't be smoking in any Marvel movies. Wolverine can never light up a smoke. That's just how it goes now.
And no more cigars for Wolverine.
Across the fucking board, which is just pathetic. So I didn't mean to make it seem like DC are all by their lonesome on the political correctness front, but I do think DC take it to a laughable extreme.
They do, but I mean, Marvel, female Thor. I mean, have you seen the screenshots or the photos from the comic books that are going around?
I have not. No.
Oh my god! They are just the most cringeworthy things, right? Literally, I'm actually gonna just quickly Google it just so I can read you it verbatim because it's so cringeworthy. Hang on.
It sucks because I enjoy the. I believe Olivier Coipel is the artist of that comic, and I love his art, and he did a Thor comic in, like, 2007 that I thought was great. I have a couple posters of it, but
I'm
misguided. Yeah. It's just such a standard copy-paste give him a vagina instead of a dick, and that there's your distinguishing feature.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this is a screen from the comic, and I'm supposed to call you Thor, damn feminists are ruining everything. And it's like, oh my god, is that really the dialogue you're going with? Damn feminists are ruining everything. And then it's like, you know, he says, what kind of Thor are you? And she's like, the kind who just broke your jaw, pow, or whatever. And then, passive-aggressively in her head, she says, that's for saying feminist like it's a four-letter word, creep. And then also, you know, for the robbing, because apparently he just robbed someone. It's like, really, you're more angry at him because he doesn't like you, that you're a feminist, than you are that he's broken the law. It's just, it's so cringeworthy. It's so cringeworthy. It's just like, it's so shoehorned in. And just what's the fucking point, you know?
It kind of reminds me of the Alan Heinberg Wonder Woman that came out in 06, 07. I actually have a poster of it, not because I enjoyed the comic, but because I enjoy Terry Dodson's art in the comic. But they got Alan Heinberg, who is a writer on Gilmore Girls, which we all kind of, anyone who's ever seen Gilmore Girls know that program was very, very, very politically slanted. I think at the end of the show, one of the characters winds up working on Barack Obama's presidential campaign, just to give you like an idea of how in your face with the political bias they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, he came on, and they were in the middle of a really good run, actually, on Wonder Woman that had gone on till like 2006, and it was really starting to build momentum, and this is sort of a long-term pattern with DC Comics. Poor Wonder Woman. Every time they start to put together a mythology and the book starts to get genuinely interesting, they bring in some gimmicky writer who's usually a woman or some kind of minority so that they can grab a headline and say, oh, now we have a woman writing our comic, or now we have a gay man writing our comic, which was the case here with Alan Heinberg. He was hired entirely because he was gay. Every headline talking about him being hired, he's a homosexual. Why does him being homosexual change Wonder Woman, and how is it move forward for the community?
Why are you even talking about that, you know? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and it was like, and then what happens? He's a TV writer. He has no time to fucking write the comic. He puts out like 5 issues. There's a 5-month delay between every single issue, and what winds up happening? Somebody else who actually knows what they're doing winds up taking over the book, and the cycle begins again. That's the Wonder Woman cycle, sadly.
I'm not a reader of comics these days. I haven't been since I was a kid, so I'm pretty out of the loop of them. But yeah, that's the thing. I don't regret it. I mean, I used to really like the Aliens comics when I was about 13. They first came out.
Oh man, the Dark Horse Alien comics.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's the ones.
Yeah, Alien versus Predator. I mean, it's Alien, touch and go. Some are good, some are bad, but the ones that are good are great.
Oh, the art in the Aliens comics is just spectacular. You know, Hicks and Newt. They're on a ship. I can't remember. I haven't read them for about, 20 years. So I can't exactly remember what happens. But I've got them all set at home at my parents' house in like the attic or something. I should really get them out. They're in terrible condition. But yeah, they're amazing. Absolutely amazing artwork. And the comic adaptation of... it was of an Alien vs. Predator book in the end, in the last story of each comic book. You'd have the aliens, the predator, and then the Alien vs. Predator. It was fucking amazing. It's fucking amazing.
And as anyone who has watched my channel recently can construe, within about 5 fucking seconds, I'm a huge Daredevil fan. And the show is about to come out. So I have a history in comics. I've drawn comics. I've been paid for it even, and had a few published. So I'm big into comics, but I'm really... This thing is not new. This development with what's been going... This has been going on for years, guys. This is not a new thing. It's not the new frontier of feminism. This is honestly... This is their frontier. They own this territory. They've owned it for years.
Yeah, they are the establishment here.
Absolutely.
There's absolutely no doubting it. We're on their turf here. You know. Let me just have a quick look at Arthur. Yeah. So that's Oh man, there's so much shit, isn't there?
Well, we're 10 minutes from the 2-hour mark. Why don't we can wrap it up with like one last story here?
I wouldn't have to wrap it up. I was just, you know, I'm just constantly surprised with just how how much crap there is to go through. Just it's constant, and yet, you know, do any of these companies who are being bullied into submission by the social justice warriors, what do they get out of it? You know what? Are they getting new, you know, extra sales from it or anything like that? I doubt it. You know,
they're getting a little bit of a positive press. I mean, they get a little bit of a. There'll be a little bit of a pop in mainstream. You know, PBS might do, or Frontline might do a special spotlight on them, or now with that baggy-eyed Bolshevik Bill Moyers, or. One of those programs or whatever, they'll fucking do a special expose on how comics have grown up and so forth. And it's like, been this way since the fucking 70s. Since Denny O'Neill shoehorned his extremely biased, extremely slanted to the left pablum in Green Lantern, Green Arrow. I mean, that was in the 70s, guys. This has been going on a long fucking in time.
But one thing recently that I saw is that a lot of the feminist sites are going on, Marvel's feminist Thor is outselling like the old Thors from like 20 years ago or whatever. I'm just sat there like, yeah, it's fucking mainstream culture now. You know, it is the box office headliner, you know? Before, it was a dorky fucking hobby, you know, a dorky specialist hobbyist thing. Now it's the mainstream headline act, you know? No wonder they're selling more.
In the defense of that headline, I would say that's probably noteworthy because of how low comic book circulation actually is right now. Very few people are actually buying comics, and I don't fucking blame them, quite frankly, given the quality.
That's a classic example
of what I was talking about. It's the Batwoman effect all over again. It's, hey, we made this character a woman, we made this character an X, a Y, a Z, Spider-Man's black, Batwoman is a lipstick lesbian, or what? They actually use the term lipstick lesbian, by the way, in press releases for Batwoman.
They call Batwoman a lipstick lesbian.
Yeah, like full on employed that term, which is like, I mean, some lesbians employ that term, but it's got a slight pejorative connotation
to it. Pejorative. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I never understood why DC was cool with putting that in fucking actual press releases. But anyways, so like it's a classic case of, okay, look, we're gonna pop our numbers, but it's absolutely gonna fall off because it always does. It happened with Wonder Woman. It's gonna happen with this. It always happens because it wasn't a creative change that was made for the right reasons.
Well, I was thinking about it like, well, of course they're selling more. They're mainstream comics. But the new Thor comic only sold something like 160,000 copies. And Thor movie, how much are the Thor movies making? You know, millions, absolutely millions upon millions upon millions. And the comics, 160,000, that's nothing.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good print run nowadays. I mean, it used to be 1 million, 2 million per comic for a while. Like, we're talking in the 90s, some of the best print runs of the 80s and stuff. Even some from, like, 2005, 2004 or something. The really, really big comics would hit the million mark. Now they're lucky to hit 100,000, 200,000. It's like, that's a good print run in 2015. So that's sort of the state of the comic book industry.
It's a pretty, pretty sad state of affairs. But this is, it just goes to, you know, the heart of everything that we've been saying. These people don't fucking buy comics. They don't buy games. They're professional whiners who take pleasure in doing nothing but whining. You know, they do not. I played through. There's a guy called Dan Olsen, who is a social justice warrior, effectively, and he made like this game, and it's an art house game, and it's called Resist. And all you do is walk forward in one direction, and you either walk far enough and the game crashes, or you stop walking and you eventually disappear.
You're sure this isn't just a reskin of Final Fantasy 13?
I'm sure. Because
it's a reskin. The hallway!
It's not a great reskin. But the point is, it's meant to be like an art house game where he's, you know, he's like, this is the terrible disillusionment of life. And someone on the... I'm just going to quickly grab the comments, because someone made a really good observation, because they're always talking about meaning and meaningfulness. You know, they're always like, oh, this was a meaningful thing. This is, you know, like with the meaning of the characters not being able to... players not being able to choose the race of their character, you know, it's a meaningful thing. And I was just looking at it thinking, this is the sort of thing that people who have no meaning in their lives say and do. You know, all the only meaning that they've got are the identity politics that they obsess over. And someone on the comments was like, normal people find meaning in the things that they love, and that's the problem. People like the social justice warriors don't love anything, you know, and the only thing they really love are themselves. And it's just like, I really think that's true. You know,
well, it is
really
the ultimate expression of narcissism to believe that every form of entertainment, that every aberrant psychic twinge that you experience is the result of someone encroaching on your emotional territory, and that, oh my God, if they step over that invisible fucking line, then they must die.
And you were entitled to a recourse as well. You're entitled to complain at them and have them change for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're entitled to an end result that favors you, and specifically how you would like it to happen as well. Because if it doesn't happen in exactly the way you like, then you're going to find something else to complain about. For example, if a character is turned... there are feminists who are complaining about female Thor because she's just a copy-paste reskin of she's, but with boobs. You see what I mean?
This male trope, isn't it?
Yes.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Of course. I didn't even think about it. You know, that was the thing. I was looking at these, you know, these stills from the female Thor, thinking, "Wow, this is brazenly feminist." You know, it's so in your face. The feminists must be thrilled about this. And yet, you know, thinking about it, of course they're not. This is exactly my point. You can't fucking please these people. There is nothing about identity politics that even vaguely lends itself to being finished.
Because, I mean, think about it. What does it ultimately feed back into? What do any politics feed back into? What are they feeding? What system are they feeding? The electoral one. The one where somebody gets elected. This is the reason, like, people don't understand. And this goes for... Okay, let's just use the Democrats-Republicans example for the Americans that are listening to this. The worst thing that George W. Bush could have done is do one of the things that the right wing of his party wanted him to do and that he promised he was going to do. Let's say, for the sake of argument, something to do with immigration. The worst thing he could have possibly done is solve that problem. Because the moment that problem is solved, there's no more eternally evergreen source of him to soak up their votes because of their discontent.
Yeah, what's he going to rail against?
And that's the exact same way with identity politics. Mm-hmm. They don't want equality because the moment they have equality, people no longer have a reason to vote for people like Barack Obama.
Yeah,
they no longer have that sponge to milk votes off of.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? These people seem to only love themselves, and there's the common feminist mantra that the personal is political. And that's what identity politics is based off of. If it's personal to you, which obviously everyone's identity is personal, you need to make that political. And so there is no solving that, is there? You know, so it would only be if you were the emperor of the world and everyone was doing exactly what you wanted all the time. Because, you know, like the guy was saying, they don't love anything, you know. I love video games. I love, you know, movies. I love, you know, history. I love these things. And so... These things have importance to me that supersedes what I would consider identity politics. And so, but these people, they don't really love anything. And so the only thing they love is themselves, and therefore this is what they base everything on. I'm absolutely certain of it.
Completely. And they cultivate that. The political parties on both sides of the aisle cultivate that mentality. The mentality that they are entitled to restitution of some kind, that they are entitled to impose their exact kind of restitution on everyone else.
You are a bad person if you don't pander to it.
Yes, that they are eternally disenfranchised, because the worst thing an identity politician could possibly do is fix a problem. That's the worst thing they could do, because at that moment, they're no longer getting those people's fucking votes.
Yeah. Because it's almost like it's the love of complaining that they do it for, you know.
Exactly.
You know, once they're not allowed to complain, they're not going to be happy. You know? Yeah. So, basically we've found ourselves in a really, some sort of swamp, a quagmire, where there's no going backwards, there's no going forwards, and we're barely managing to stay afloat, you know.
Yeah.
And, so it's kind of depressing, really, isn't it? But what worries me the most is, like, who has programmed these people to think that way? You know, who has done this? I think it must be the sort of, you know, the everyone's a winner, Generation Y.
It's endemic from childhood at this point. But I think where it becomes stratified, I think we could both agree on this, is in college.
Yeah,
there is definitely an industry of victimhood in college right now.
It's shocking, frankly, and it's what worries me, though. The thing is, it's becoming tantamount to abuse. I think I read an article the other day. This was again for This Week in Stupid. It was about a band called Black Pussy, and you know it's a name they've obviously chosen to piss people off. But listening to the feminists who were complaining about it was so telling. There were these black feminists who were like, "This is oppressive, obviously. You know, as a black woman, I am reduced to nothing but my race and my gender, blah, 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 blah." And I'm thinking, I bet the person who programmed you with these methods of thought was a white person. You know, I bet it was a white person
who has put you... 9 out of 10 times, absolutely.
Exactly. Who has put you, you know, like Peggy McIntosh or whoever has written like all this privileged shit. You know, they've programmed it into you at university, and now you are in an invisible prison. You're wearing invisible shackles in your head put on you by white people, so you are nothing but a black woman. You know, you're nothing more than that in your head, according to you.
Yeah, it's you that know? Age-old concept of we're going to fight for equality by cordoning people off into their own special minority and ethnic groups. And they're exactly. going to stay in their little areas, and incidentally, they're all going to vote for us. But, you know, that's not what's important. It's that we're all fighting for you. That's what's important. But just stay in your little area and continue to funnel your votes our way, and everything will eventually be solved, even though it never actually is.
But what worries me most about it, though? I mean, that's I absolutely think it is for political reasons. It absolutely is. Yeah. But what bothers me is, like, what quality of life must someone be having if they can be having a great day, you know, everything's going great, and then they open the paper and there's a band playing soon called Black Pussy, and they're just like fucking triggered. Oh shit! Oh my god! You know, they start shaking, they start crying, and then they phone up their local newspaper so they can complain and, you know, get a report written so they can make national news out of it. Sorry, there's a band called Black Pussy. I'm a black woman. I'm fucking triggered. This makes me feel like a slave, and it's just like that has to be some kind of mental abuse, you know, that you can ruin someone's day by hearing the name of a band. It's just I just can't even I have no way of understanding what must be going through their head, but they look like they're suffering, you know. It's getting to the point where I'm thinking, right, should we just all like get a bunch of pillows and smother the social justice warriors to death and just go, shh, it's for the best. It's for the best. You know, because, I mean, what else is going to have to...
God knows enough are crouching in their own personal emotional pillow fort, lobbing verbal hand grenades from cover at whoever they construe to be their opponents. I mean,
yeah, anyone who walks by, you know. Fucking ableism! But that's the thing, isn't it? It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, these people are going to have to be deprogrammed, you know, as if they've been in North Korea or something. So, I think we're fucked, you know. So I'm such a doom monger. I have one beer and I'm suddenly like, oh god, everything's awful. Sorry.
Turned into Blade Runner over here, guys. Mm. Sorry.
That's, Yeah, should we wrap it up then? Because it's been a couple of hours.
We're hitting the two-hour mark, so seems as good as time as any.
Yeah, leave them wanting more, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, if you're up for doing this again, I'm up for doing this again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was a gay old time. Maybe not full-blown gay, but at a bare minimum, my curious old time. So.
No, it absolutely was. I honestly, mate, it was a pleasure. And, you know, I think everyone enjoyed it. And, I guess we'll see you all later. Do you want to talk us out?
God fucking speed, folks.